I'm Annie Apple, and I'm here to invite you to come and listen to my new podcast series, Raising a Pro. It's the most intimate sports-related conversations you will hear. Each week, we explore the journeys of some of your favorite NFL players through the eyes of those that know them best. From Joe Burrow, DeAndre Hopkins, Myles Garrett, Ezekiel Elliott, Nick and Joey Bosa, just to name a few. With exclusive insights and information, we leave no stone unturned. Subscribe now to Raising a Pro on your favorite podcast app.
HD Smartcast. You are listening to an HD Smartcast original.
Don't you always want to hear it right from the horse's mouth? I certainly do. I want the best and the brightest minds in the industry to tell me about it. Yeah, Tell Me About It is my latest podcast. Since I come across so many interesting people in the industry, some of my favorite students, they ask me if I can speak to some really intelligent and well-known people on hot and trending topics, you know, like content, influencers, health, branding, entrepreneurship, and more. Who am I to quiz the best and brightest, you ask? Well, I am Siddharth Deshmukh, also known as the Traveling Professor. Maybe you've heard me before somewhere. Yeah, I teach across various institutes. Join me and new experts every week over two parts where we dissect these topics and try to make sense of them. Hopefully, learn something about it when they tell me about it. This podcast is an HT Smartcast original and is available on htsmartcast.com, India's fastest growing podcast producing platform.
Let me put you on the spot here a little, Chandresh, okay? So now imagine that you have to judge somebody that you have to invest in, right? And you're trying to understand that this person's IQ and this person's EQ, okay? Emotional quotient and intelligence quotient. And you're actually coming across, how would you grade? So on a scale of 1 to 10, how much importance would you place to IQ? And on the scale of 1 to 10, how much importance would you place to EQ? You know, perceived EQ and perceived IQ, of course.
That's a tricky question. I guess we don't really think about it. It is an emotional thing. I mean, it's a bit like, you know, when people are recruiting, for example, then somebody comes in, you know, the research says that you make a decision about that person literally within the first few seconds, and then you go through the process to rationalize.
That's right.
So any answer I give you will be a rationalization, which probably won't be correct. You just get a sense of energy about that person or something. Yeah. And it's really hard to quantify. And yes, it's also about, you know, do I really understand? Are they presenting this problem and solution? Do I get the problem? Do I get the solution? And is the market big enough? You know, it's those three fundamental foundations, do I understand this problem? Is it something that is relevant, something that I'm interested in as an investor? Is this going to solve that problem? And is the market big enough?
So what I like about your answer is that you're not talking of IQ or EQ, and you completely avoided my scaling of the thing. But what you're saying, is more important, which is, okay, you come across a presence. Okay, and you either like that presence or you don't like that presence, and you're being very genuine about it. And then you're trying to rationalize whether you like that presence based on whether they're prepared, the kind of work that they're put in, are they genuine, and the rest of the stuff that you've spoken. Would that be fair?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, there's the tangible things. You know, as an investor, you have to look at the numbers, you have to look at the data. So it is data driven, of course. So fundamentally, you do need to obviously look at the market, you need to look at the competition, all those things.
Yeah.
But actually, there's a lot of people out there doing amazing things and very often doing the same things. Yeah. So you're having to sift between, it's again, like recruitment, you know, there's lots of people with the same degrees, with the same experience, you know, with great CVs. Yeah. So how do you make that decision? And it does come down to, you know, that connection, human connection. Are they authentic? Are they passionate? Yeah. Those are all things that it's hard to quantify without that human interaction and judgment call.
Okay.
So it's a combination of left and right. brain yeah. logic. You know, you need a combination of both of those, I think.
Yeah, perhaps it is a little difficult to put a scale on it. Anirban, have you thought about what I asked?
it's the million dollar question, which is right now. I mean, every brand is asking.
Really, million dollars.
I mean, billions of dollars. I mean, probably. But all to be honest, I mean, you know, it's not a single question. It's many questions because it depends entirely on the kind of brand you are and the kind of business that you're in. For instance, just to illustrate, today if you're a retail brand, you don't even see room to survive. You're struggling to survive. People have lost the confidence to walk into stores. I mean, you know, the crowded places. So malls are shut. I mean, so it's a very challenging place for you to be in. If you're an auto company, you might be seeing some kind of, you know, uptick, depending on how well you've been placed, how well you're branded. I mean, how strongly you kind of, you know, what kind of equity you have with people, because suddenly you see an opportunity that, you know, more and more people who probably postponed the idea of buying a car will be kind of spooked by what is happening around you. The fact that there is no public transport, and you will kind of start looking at that as a, you know, investment to make. It's suddenly an investment and not just a luxury or a indulgence.
Yeah.
So depending on what kind of a brand you are, what kind of category you're playing in, the challenges, the questions will be very, very specific. Having said that, I think there is a larger need that will be, you know, become very important. And I think and for any brand at any time, you know, what is important is a reading of change. Because what brands, successful brands always do is come in and fill the vacuum sometimes, bridge some gaps. Make some connections that change has come and disrupted. And sometimes there are also new opportunities that come into play. So it's very, very important for any agency preparing to kind of speak to brands to get a strong sense of the kind of, you know, narratives today in people's lives, you know, that are taking shape. And these are everyday conversations. These are thoughts that are building into narratives. You know, as you hear more and more people saying the same thing, it's only when you have a sort of a pulse of that.
So can I ask you a related question? I mean, I've sat through a lot of agency pitches and they all have this model, okay? They all have this model and this model is amazing. Like, this is what it is. But actually, if you sit through 10 agency pitches, it's the same damn model, right? Now, the thing is that now that you've seen both sides, right? We've all learned, we've all done those damn models and the rest of it. If you have to advise an agency, you can take the COVID, post-COVID, pre-COVID, whatever scenario. What are the key elements that an agency must cover in their pitch to the client? Key elements, ek, do, teen, whatever.
I'll actually focus on one. And then let's see if we kind of want to talk about more.
Sure.
What are you shifting?
Oh, nice. Okay.
You know, are you bringing order to chaos? What is your solution? Because that is what you do as a brand. That is what you, and I would say that, you know, this is not limited to brands alone. I could be developing a new app, which I'm pitching to a bunch of investors or to a marketplace.
Correct.
But what am I shifting through that? And it's very important. And I think Chandresh very beautifully talked about the problem and saying that if the client doesn't get a sense of the problem or the person on the other side doesn't have a clear sense of the problem. And that's exactly what I'm saying in a slightly different way. What are you shifting? And that is the question to be asked.
So even
and that
said,
needs to be out there.
You're also talking of a shift of perceptions. What are you shifting means also in the mental realm.
That follows, but I'm essentially saying is that what is the frame through which I look at, you know, this thing?
The problem.
And there are so many different ways of doing it. I mean, for instance, you could be a productivity app, which says that I am bringing order to chaos.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're changing something. There is an existing way of doing things. I'll talk about my own personal favorite example from my, you know, back in the younger days of a planner in an agency. My favorite pitch of all time. We never won that pitch, but it was a sort of an important moment for me. We were pitching for Xerox, you know, a big brand, and you know, and I was enamored by technology trends and their Palo Alto stories and all of that. And this was Xerox just before it kind of shut down, unfortunately, who were trying to kind of keep up and struggle with this, the world, a digital world of the workplace where you had printers rather than Xerox machines. The whole workflow had changed and you were trying to sell a printer being a copier brand. what was fascinating is that, you know, you go back and say that what kind of a brand are you? You're a document brand. You come from a world where you looked at reproducing, kind of, you know, you're copying like an assembly line, you're kind of multiplying and you're making labor. You're essentially being labor of it. What I would earlier copy with a, you know, with a carbon paper, today I use a Xerox to do that. So you've taken manual labor away and that's your intervention. Yeah. But this world is a world of ideas. It's not a world of mass production. Yeah. It's the world of creativity and coming up with new ideas. That is what this digital world is about. Right. That is what it enables. And how do you speak to that?
So why didn't you win the pitch?
Oh, it was interesting. They loved it. They loved it to the extent that somebody from some of their internal consultants from Palo Alto came down to meet us and talk to us and hear about what we had to say about Xerox. And I think that's what you do in a good, in a successful pitch. You connect with something which is there at the core, especially with strong brands, you know, with established brands. There is a story. There's a powerful story. Over time, it gets buried. Management changes, people change, new kind of cultural influences come in, and somewhere that story is lost. It takes some amount of archaeology, and you know, and this is not just getting into the room, but getting into the DNA of that brand, and saying that what is it that you're really about, and how can you speak to today? What can you change in today?
Yeah. No, sorry,
can I add?
Which
is. So one of the things that I look for and connect with, so I use a methodology for building, doing digital transformation and exponential organizations. And one of the key things that we look for at the top end, which is like the key principle, is something we call an MTP, which is a massive transformational purpose.
So there you go.
And, and that really connects with what you're saying, Anirban, which is, you know, what is, as a brand or as a startup or as, you know, as a company, what is your MTP? What is your massive transformational purpose? You know, what is that big idea, which is independent of product? It's not, hey, you know, we sell this. It's about that. What is that massive change? What is that shift, as you said, that we're trying to create? What is that impact in the world that we're trying to create? And increasingly, you know, the companies that I'm seeing and the trend promoting or trying to promote is for companies to be both profitable but also purpose driven as well. So you know, having this idea that it's one or the other, I think is old school. So all the companies we're looking at and trying to build are ones where you're bringing both of those together, so there's purpose and profit, and they have some kind of massive transformational purpose. So that's that foundation.
That's very interesting. But I want to come back to the question that I was asking. And there was a reason behind, I was really genuinely curious as to why, in spite of such a wonderful idea, you didn't win that pitch, because it was leading to a question which I'd gotten out of my notes before. So one of the things was, how important is a pitch? And this question is for both of you. How important in the overall scheme of things? Say, sometimes somebody's uncle knows somebody's nephew, and that's why whatever pitch you make, and nepotism. So, you know, you've heard the conspiracy theories and the stories. So I just, again, want to know, to your mind, how important is the pitch? Okay. Related question. What is the best outcome that a pitch can have? Because, you know, youngsters who might be listening to a program like this might think, oh, you know, yes, boss thing sort of happens. That's a Shahrukh Khan film thing, that you make a pitch and then everyone gives the order and, you know, the check is signed and stuff like that. And we know that that shit doesn't happen. So what I'm trying to understand is what's the best outcome that a pitch can have. So that's the second layered question. The third layered question is, do you really think an elevator pitch actually works? And if yes, why? So anyone, one of you, those are three questions there.
Okay. I mean, I'll start with the third. And I think the elevator pitch works only, I think there are some specific contexts. I think it's largely a myth. Yes, there are people who are waiting to, you know, latch onto a Hollywood studio executive in an elevator and narrate their story in sentences or a strategic investor. But it rarely plays out that way. If at all there is a way in which the elevator pitch works, is when a CEO talks to the other CEO in an elevator. And in passing, you say that, you know what, you know, this is what you should be looking at. And it's not a pitch. It's just a friendly conversation. A
different level conversation,
And you, what you're doing is you're opening a door there, not closing a deal. That's how you open the door.
Yeah.
So that's how I see it.
Okay.
I've forgotten the other two questions now. I'm trying to answer this.
Let's answer the elevator thing and then I'll get back to you. Don't worry, I won't forget.
So the elevator thing, I think, again, it's about you're not trying to sell something. All you're trying to do is to plant an idea and to make a connection to get a meeting, right?
Yeah.
That's all it is. If you can interest somebody with an idea, it's like Inception, the movie, right? You just plant a tiny idea, have that connection, and, you know, so when you call them, then they'll take your meeting. That, you know, an elevator pitch can do that, right? So it, and that I've seen that I've seen that happen, right?
Yeah.
In many ways, sometimes it's a great way of being able to connect with people who you can't connect with through the normal routes. You know, if you send your pitch in through the normal routes, then it's not going to happen. But if you've met them somewhere through some human connection, then they're more likely to at least read it. So that's a start.
Okay. So again, coming back to the question that I had. How important is a pitch in this overall scheme of trying to win over a new relationship or win over a new investment? I think that was the genesis of the question. I think the second one even I have forgotten. So let's focus.
You also, I think you also asked me why we did win that Xerox pitch. That was the other question. Okay, let me complete that loop for you for everyone. So it was you know, eventually what we ended up with at the pitch was something much more ambitious than selling one printer. It was taking Xerox's philosophy into a new era.
Yeah.
And unfortunately for us, it was ill-timed because within, I think, a month or two of this meeting, Xerox shut down.
Okay. All right.
So it was already too late. The reason why they were interested and they kind of flew down all the way from Palo Alto was because they, I think nobody had talked about Xerox and where it comes from and how it can kind of play in this new sort of digital work context. And we did that, which was not limited to selling a printer.
I wish you had met them earlier, man.
So you have moments like that, but it was a very defining moment. You understood the power of what you could accomplish if you really got deep into something.
Yeah.
What is the best outcome of a pitch? I think different contexts, different kind of answers here. I mean, if you're a startup pitching for money, if you're a startup looking for investors, your best bet probably in many cases is not a sign check, like you said, but the next meeting, which is a more detailed meeting,
so that's
which
is a good more outcome. Sort of
that's a great outcome. If you're an agency pitching campaigns for a new client, and the best outcome is very different. Not only is it about winning that business at the end of that pitch, but it is about being able to sell the campaign that you shared on that pitch.
Yeah, that's right.
The rarest of rare things. It's the rarest of rare things. It never happens. I mean, barely ever.
Barely.
The solution you presented, because not everybody has the time and investment made to understand a problem in its fullness. And therefore to share a solution that truly, truly is aligned to every aspect of that business problem or that brand's problem. So it's the rarest of rare cases. You win a pitch. Not only do you win a pitch, your campaign goes through, you know, pretty much as it is. That's the holy grail there.
Wonderful. Thank you. That was pretty good. Chandresh, what about you? What do you think is the relative importance of a pitch in the overall scheme of things?
I'll answer the part of the previous question as well. If you look at the numbers, if you're doing raising investment, then you're going to do a lot of pitches and 99.9, you know, won't be successful, right? That's just the numbers, right?
Yeah.
So the way to look at it is not that it's an unsuccessful pitch. I think the most important outcome is that, did you learn something from that? Did you actually learn something about how to improve your next pitch? Because if you've done that, then you're gaining, right? So if you go in with that mindset that you're going in there to learn, okay, so now I've learned that this is the bit that's missing, or this is maybe something where we need to strengthen, or this is something that we hadn't considered. If you go in with that mindset and come out with that mindset, then you're never a loser, because you're always learning and you're getting better and better. And let's face it, you know, all these big, you know, unicorns, you know, all of them did a lot of pitches, you know. None of them were like the magic, like in the movies, like you said. You know, you do that one pitch and people give you big checks. That's not reality. The reality is that everyone gets turned down many, many, many times, you know. We all know all the stories, right? But the key thing is
actually, Chandresh, most of them, the stories are below the radar. So you only in the media, you only hear about who's won.
That's the media, right?
So. Yeah, that's the media.
Exactly. It's extremes, isn't it? It's like, you know, it's always the extremes, you know, either you're terrible or you're like Superman, you know. But the reality is that, you know, most people have gone through many, many iterations and many pitches. And also, not to take it personally, you know, if somebody doesn't get your idea or if somebody doesn't, you know, doesn't believe you, don't kind of, you know, take it personally.
Okay.
That's, it's maybe it's a not good fit, you know, maybe you've been saved, you know, because remember, you know, a pitch is not just them buying you, you are buying them as well. It's a two-way thing. So if you go with that mindset, do we want to work with this investor? Do I actually want to be, you know, connected with this investor? So it is about those values as well. Does this person have the same values, the same vision?
Yeah.
You know, are these people that I want to work with? You know, it shouldn't be like, please give me money, please give me, you know, it should be a mutual understanding, a mutual connection. So that's important.
Thank you. Now I've got one individual question for the two of you coming from, one is by Nitin Goel, and I'm going to give it to Anirban. What are your top suggestions for pitching for creator collaborations in the digital sphere, especially with everything moving online going forward?
Pitching for digital collaboration.
Yeah, so creator collaboration. So in the digital sphere, what would your top suggestions be like?
I mean, it's. I mean, to put it very simply, I think the first thing is something that Chandresh, I think, just touched upon. It's you're going to collaborate with someone to create something.
Yeah.
Where do you stand? I mean, where, you know, in terms of your individual beliefs, in terms of what you're doing, and without that, it's very unlikely that collaborations work. Collaborations are very tricky because it sounds really exciting and it's a new form of work. You know, you reach out, you create a little collaborative and you function and you produce something, you know, you dream of producing something magical. You bring together skills that you probably don't have as an individual, and that's what you're trying to overcome. But it's so important that everyone's aligned to what is being really done here.
So how do you do that when you're working remotely? I mean, it's so difficult, right? I understand what you're saying. So just don't look at strengths, look at the value system underlying those strengths and see if that there's an alignment of values. I get it. How do you actually make it happen is what I'm trying to figure out.
Honestly, I mean, it's not too different from how it would normally happen, because what would happen normally? Let's look at a non-COVID situation and non-digital only kind of interaction situation. Like what would one do? We would meet each other. We would sit down over a drink or a cup of coffee and have a few conversations. It is through those conversations that we get to know each other. We know that what am I in this game for? What am I playing to win? And it is there that you find common ground or not, and then that is how you kind of, you know, build your network. And I think that it is through those conversations. And I think it's like how, you know, you and Chandresh introduced your, you know, how you know each other, and you talked about these rambling conversations that you both enjoy, and that's good enough, and that sustains you over the years to keep kind of reaching out to one another.
Yeah, okay. I got it. I got the gist of what you're saying, Anirban. Thank you so much. Okay, one question to you, Chandresh. Like, why do you think only tech startups are given the money? Why no creator? It's a question coming from people in the live stream. Why not any creative? Why are there no takers for creative startups? Why only tech startups are seen in the fray?
I don't think that's entirely true. I think there is money going into some creative startups, but yes, the bulk of money is in tech startups, and the reason is very simple, is because they are very scalable. You have the ability to create something which is super scalable, can have massive impact, can have huge revenues, you know, very quickly. So that's the key. And there are, you know, there are tech companies which are very creative as well. You know, I'm a big design and creative fan. And the best companies are the ones that actually incorporate great design, great creativity, And utilize technology. So it's, I think the best companies are the ones where they bring the scalability of a technical solution, but then all the human interaction, the user experience design, you know, great branding, all of those creative elements and put the two together. I think those are the companies that do well.
Okay, so there are some immediate responses that are coming on my WhatsApp live stream and says, look, startups are you know, also have the highest failure rate, right? So what do you have to say for that? And what I'm just connecting something that Vyom has said, that do you think these guys need the right pitch, or it's going to work as long as you have built something whizzy-bangy?
Okay, so if you look at the numbers for startups, yes, most of them fail, right? Irrespective of whether they're tech startups or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah.
The advantage tech startups have is that it's actually doesn't cost very much if they fail, because the cost of building a tech startup now has come down massively, right? Yeah. If you're building like a property startup, or you're building a hotel or something, you know, the cost is huge. Yeah. You know, pharma startup, any of those other industries, the cost is much higher. The reason why more tech startups fail is because there's a lot more startups that, you know, it's just the volume, right? And and it's just easier to start up.
Okay. All right.
What's the second part of the question?
No, it was just a comment on, does somebody who has something whizzy bangy, does he need a great pitch, or is like, you know, I've got Google.
See, whizzy bangy doesn't sell, right? It's all about going back to those core things, right? Because it's about saying, does it solve a real need? Is somebody willing to pay for solving that problem? Is there a big enough market for that, you know, whizzy bangy thing? It's never about some clever technology. You know, there's been some great technologies that have been created through the years and have ended up in the graveyard of companies. Absolutely. It's never about the best technology, you know.
Yep, absolutely. All right.
Can I add something to what Chandresh was saying there, if you don't mind? You know, we talk about failure rates of startups, or where they fail to kind of generate enough investor interest. And you know, if you really go back to it, where are things going wrong most of the time? And I believe that, you know, if you think of, you know, when you think of society, and we say that, oh, you know, society exists through communication, and business also exists through communication.
Yeah.
But I would actually like to push that a little more and say that actually we don't exist through communication. We exist in communication.
Oh,
we are
nice.
We are forever acting through our words.
Hmm.
And that is, unless as a new idea, unless you're able to frame it in terms of action, your likelihood of failure is high.
Love is a verb.
My favorite example of that is actually not from the world of marketing, but probably one of the most powerfully marketed ideas in India. It is Gandhi's Satyagraha.
Correct.
It's absolutely action. It is not non-violence, which does not suggest action. It suggests the absence of a certain kind of action. But when you say truth force, which is what Satyagraha means, you've been able to kind of actually brand it in a very specific way for a very specific audience.
Well put. Yeah.
And you've made it a
last great mass communicator, man.
Yes. And in that single word, you have collapsed kind of all action. And without words, we do not have action.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Wonderful. And, you know, just I'd completely echo what you're saying, Anirban, because what I look for is, does this opportunity, does this solution connect with some underlying core human need? You know, it's got to connect with some core, primitive human underlying need, you know. And if it does, then it's more likely to succeed.
Okay. I'm going to now ask...
Change. You know, over time, those don't change. They are always there. So.
Yeah. Sorry, Chandresh. Sorry to interrupt you. I was just about to say that I'm now going to ask you one really difficult question just to end it, just so that, you know, I'll have some fun out of it.
Okay.
So, you know, the question is, you have to recount one funny incident. Okay. It'll be even better if, you know, things were chaotic and you failed in it dramatically, or some funny thing. I'll certainly add it, add mine as well. And and that involves Chandresh. It was a really funny incident. So Chandresh, you can't steal that one for me. So I'll start off, and then you guys can end it. This was a few years back, actually, and Chandresh, me and a colleague of ours, Kaushik Sen, shout out to Kaushik, we were trying to make a pitch, and we were in a car moving from one meeting to the other, and we needed Wi-Fi. And so we didn't know where to get it. And so therefore, we ended up in a pub, which was like a villagey pub. In a remote village somewhere in the UK. I'm sure Chandresh remembers that. And it was surreal because there were these elderly British gentlemen looking at us very strangely.
In the country, who don't really see very many brown people.
Brown people in a pub, opening up a Wi-Fi. They must have thought we are going to bomb the place. I'm telling you. That was really funny. It was the funniest sort of situation. And thankfully, it ended up in some kind of success. But I think for drama, it doesn't come better than that. I mean, you have to be there to see it. So I've done my piece. Now you guys go. Tell me a really interesting situation that happened.
So I can cover one. So we were, and I don't know, so that remembers this one. So we were at an exhibition on a stand, and this was early days, one of the first times we'd actually had a stand. And literally we had no idea how to put up stands. We had created these posters and we'd used blue tack to put these posters up. And we had this small stand, and we were actually visited by an executive from a big company. It was like it's probably the second biggest in the world, right?
Yes.
So I'm there trying to be cool and trying to do this pitch while he's sitting there. And at the same time, from the corner of my eye, I can see this poster slowly peeling off and slowly, and I'm trying to be cool and continue giving this pitch. And yet I'm seeing this big poster slowly coming off. And
I was going to think that it's going to fall on his head.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's where all that, ability to try and keep cool and, keep going. It really, and it did come off, but thankfully it didn't fall on him. And then, thankfully, we just continued and kind of said, don't worry about that, So, but yeah, stuff like that happens. So.
Anirban, over to you. I'm sure yours will be the funniest. Yeah.
I don't know, probably most embarrassing, most certainly. But this was my early days. I was just getting started in the agency as a planner, as a strategy person. And I was back in Calcutta then. And it's a small market, limited business. So, and this was the early days of telecom. So, mobile phones, so mobile phone service pitch. And it would have made, winning the pitch would kind of transform the fortunes of that office. Thanks. There's a new MD on the other side, the client side, and I was in full flow, at the pitch presentation, talking about, because this was the day when mobile phones, both the phones and the service, were hideously expensive. Yeah. Very few people could afford it. And I was kind of drawing this societal picture of our attitude towards consumption. And this was a couple of decades ago, so, or a little more. And I'm painting this picture of how we are frugal. Yeah. And how we actually look down a little on conspicuous consumption and too many gold watches. And while I'm saying this, I noticed from the corner of my eye that, my agency head, all the big guys who come with me for the pitch, kind of, looking at me strangely. But I am completely in flow, so I do not notice anything. And I go on with my little, side rant about how, frugal society, frugal consumption culture, looking at things like these, ostentation and et cetera, look down upon and gold this and gold that and businessmen this and that. And at the end of the pitch, they said, did you even pause to see what he was wearing? He was wearing a gold chain. He was wearing a gold watch. He had many gold rings on his fingers. But we won that pitch. Something clicked.
Realize, a lot of times people think, it's that person.
Yeah, it's not me, it's that guy. It's that guy. Yeah. So that was a bit hair-raising until we kind of got the news. Yeah.
Thank you. Wow. 1 hour is up, guys. 1 hour is up. Wow, I don't know how long. Yeah. Thank you so much for a wonderful conversation, both of you. I really owe it to you. I think this is one of the most free-flowing conversations I've had in this particular series that we are running. Thank you. All mistakes mine. All awkward questions are my fault. Thank you so much, Anirban. Thank you so much, Chandresh. Do hang on. We would like to, introduce the rest of the team. But for the rest of you, bye-bye. And hope you had a good time.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Wow, that was a good one, right? More of where that came from soon. Want to reach out to me? I'm Siddharth Deshmukh, and I'm the traveling professor on Instagram. You'll find the funny side of me there. And on LinkedIn, I'm a little bit more serious, but I'm still the traveling professor. To give us feedback, you can reach out to us on HT Smartcast. We are present on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, and YouTube, the usual suspects. To listen to more podcasts, log on to htsmartcast.com or suno naye nazariye se. And join me in the journey. Onward ho!
This was an HT Smartcast original. HT Smartcast.
A different future starts with you. That's why GoDaddy does more than help you find a name. You can create, sell, and get found online so any small business can make a change. We need a new generation of thinking. Your way of thinking. Start different at GoDaddy.com.